This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, everyone. Do you wish you were somewhere sunny, but are dealing with another crazy spring? There's a solution to get that feeling. I'm grabbing a Hawaiian Breeze 5-Hour Energy and escaping there in my mind. Sports fans, ever stay up late for the game and drag the next day? A 5-Hour Energy shot will fix that no problem. 5-Hour Energy's website has tons of flavors, over 15 to choose from. Watermelon, Tropical Burst, Blue Raspberry, and even hard-to-find ones like Strawberry Lemonade and Extra Strength Fan Fuel. There's a flavor for everyone. You can even build your own 12 or 24 pack and have it delivered. Or grab a shot at your local store. They're everywhere. And it's basketball season. My schedule is packed and I don't want to miss a second, so I grab a 5-Hour Energy shot. They're perfect for back-to-back games or when my team plays late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going through the game and the next morning. Visit 5hourenergy.com for deals and to stock up before tip-off.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
It is the Hoffman Show. That's us. Greg Hoffman here. Anthony Haney there. Here on the Team 980. We got all kinds of... It's a potpourri kind of day, Anthony. First of all, I love your hat.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Wow, that's why. Rooster was in here. You were, but it's because my mic was quiet.
Oh, okay.
That was the thing, because something... Sometimes when I move the computers around in here, also, is that my mic making crackly noises or is that just my headphones?
I think your headphones.
Okay, that's good. Because that means no one else is hearing them, and now I sound like a person who's hearing things. Sometimes when I move the computers around in here to get set for the show, the wires knock the mic levels. Also, Chris Russell is the loudest person in the history of the planet, and so the mic level that he needs, because this is Chris Russell's voice at all, I can't even do it. I'm afraid I'm going to hurt my vocal cords. Is very different than what I need. So I had to give that the old boosty boost to get back in phase, if you will. So potpourri of things on the show today. We have previews of both NCAA tournaments through multiple angles. Ben Pickman from The Athletic is going to take care of both angles for us on the women's tournament. We're going to go through the bracket with him, and we're going to talk about some of the top WNBA prospects, considering the Mystics have 3 picks in the top 6 in the April draft, which is now, what's today? Today's the 19th. The WNBA draft, Anthony, is less than a month away.
Good gracious. It's moving, man.
Yeah. There's going to be like 3 to 5 new Mystics in a month. It's crazy. Like probably a month from like Monday or something, it'll be media day or something silly.
Yeah.
So.
I forgot how quickly the WNBA draft is following March Madness.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely bananas wild how they do it. But that is how they do it. And so we'll play along and go from there. But our mission is to make sure that people are locked in, that people are informed. And so we'll do that with Ben Pickman coming up at either 5:15 or 5:30. We'll see how long our chat at 5 o'clock is. That will be one of the determining factors. Jeremy Wu from ESPN, who is one of their NBA draft analysts, he is going to join us to go through the top NBA draft prospects. I kind of am going to say, Anthony, outside of Cooper Flagg, because I feel like people know Cooper Flagg at this point.
Yep.
So we'll talk about some of the other top prospects in the tournament, And then we will have our second consecutive let's go through the entire bracket with someone who knows it better than us. Yesterday, Kevin Brown gave you everything you needed to know in 20 minutes. We made a stop in Denton Day's office before we came in today to our studio here. Denton's office is just a conference room down the hall that he doodles on the whiteboard and does fantastic digital content from. But we decided to do a funny bit where we went and sat in Denton's office and we recorded a tournament preview. So that'll be at 6 o'clock. Dave Johnson, head of Wizards and Jazz tonight at 6:30. So we are locked, loaded, and ready to go. And we have, to start the show, Anthony Haney, a little bit, and I do mean just a little bit, of breaking news.
Breaking news.
Oh, snap, news is broken. Breaking news.
Per the old multiple reports, Adam Schefter is the one that I'm going to read this verbatim from. A reworked deal for Debo in D.C. Oh, what a clever headline. The Commanders are guaranteeing $17 million of Debo Samuel's previously non-guaranteed salary for this season, along with adding another $3 million worth of incentives, per sources. Samuel now will play this season on a one-year deal worth up to $20 million, including $17 million guaranteed. Samuel's agent, Tory Dandy, and the Commanders' general manager, Adam Peters, negotiated the deal. I'm going to be honest with you, Anthony. I don't really know what this means a whole lot. This is obviously news. There is not a ton here, I think, that impacts anything but ultimately Debo Samuel's bank account. Like, I don't think this is going to have any big deal on the cap. Like, Debo, as long as he was on the roster, was going to count roughly, from what I understood, $17 million against the cap anyway. So my question is like, once, like, the team wouldn't probably do this unless they get something out of it. So is there a chance that they moved around some money in a way that they added a void year or something that I don't know. If everything's guaranteed in salary, that should mean it just counts on the cap as is. But did they do something to bring his cap number down and push some money into the future? Maybe, but it doesn't sound like it. That the way that's worded from Schefter is like, you were going to count $17 million, even though it was non-guaranteed. Technically, they could have cut him after like training camp or whatever, and, you know, per game roster bonuses or whatever. But like, those numbers kind of go on the cap now. So like, yeah, if you cut him after training camp, because training camp's a bomb scare, would you save that money? Yes. But what are you going to do with $17 million in September? I would much rather have a happier Debo Samuel. And so what the team gets out of it, hopefully, is a happier player who is, you know, feels good about the franchise. You add a little bit of incentives. And so obviously incentive is good. And like, let's have this guy wanting to go out there and hit these incentive numbers. Certainly worked for like Zach Ertz last year, who hit a bunch of numbers on the last day of the regular season and made himself a whole bunch of money. Remember us talking about that on the show?
Yep.
So if that's the case, like, is this news? Sure. Do I fully understand why it happened? If I'm going to be honest with you guys, and I think at this point, over the last couple of weeks, you know that I don't know nothing on this contract stuff. Like, I understand a lot of the fundamentals and the basics of it. This one, it seems like it's much more of an interpersonal relationship thing where we're going to try to make sure we get the best out of Debo Samuel. Like, we traded for you for a reason. We're not trading for you to cut you. So having this salary be non-guaranteed feels very silly. It's going to count on our cap pretty much no matter what. So let's just guarantee it. We can give you a little bit more in incentives. And if you go out and ball out, then, well, we've already paid you a lot of money. We've shown you good faith, and maybe it helps them get a better number next year. But there's no long-term commitment here. So buying yourself goodwill and future salary cap space, that's about my best guess, Ant.
I mean, I think your guess is pretty on, you know. I think it's online, to be honest. Again, like, Debo, he wanted money. He wanted a contract extension. I think them guaranteeing him a little bit of money just up front, I think is going to make him happy, make him go out there, you know, and give Washington the best. But I think it will also, if he does go out there and ball out, I think the conversation we had yesterday about Terry, about Debo, about them being two, I think he really might actually want to demand, you know, more money than the 20, you know, that you had proposed, like a 2 for $40 or whatever it is. So, I mean, again, I think it would just be good for him to go out there, be happy, and us get the best out of him. And if he ends up, you know, wanting to come back and re-sign with us, I think that would be great as well. But I think it would be a little scary when it comes to the financials about, like, what he might demand or want to command.
He's got the contract that I currently see on Over the Cap, which I don't think is the updated one yet, is $16 million in base salary. His cap number is 17.4, and it's non-guaranteed. If they cut him, there's zero dead money, and they save 17.4. So they've now guaranteed that, but, like, on their books, they were probably already mentally guaranteeing that. It's just because you can, it's not guaranteed, doesn't mean it doesn't count against the cap or anything. So, and they wouldn't have traded for him if they didn't plan on keeping him. So this in many ways is just formalizing the agreement and the commitment to each other in a way that's an act of good faith and hopefully pays off for them in the long term. There's plenty of other changes potentially coming to the NFL, though, as well. New rule changes that have been proposed today, including the banning of the tush push. Again, is there actually a smart something somewhere to be done about that play, or is there nothing to be done at all? Plus, the Lions don't seem too happy about what the Commanders did to them last year, and the fact that they had to play Washington in their first playoff game. So they proposed a solution that would change the way the playoffs are done. And while it would be fun to, and probably easier radio, to just dunk on this idea, I actually don't hate it either. We will discuss some of the proposed rule changes in the NFL next on The Hoffman Show.
And some people shouldn't be allowed out in public.
Why not?
You know our guy D. Will?
Oh, yeah?
Who calls in? He just hit me on Instagram, like literally 4 seconds before we came out of break. So I posted to Instagram a screenshot of my recent calls. And then you calling me before the show yesterday. Is the only non-spam call currently on my recent calls list.
That's insane.
I'm not kidding. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. This goes back to yesterday. If I want to go back to Monday, 10, 11. 10 of my last 11 calls are spam calls.
That's not the life you deserve, dude.
No, look at that. Look at all that red.
That is a lot of red.
And then there's Anthony Haney, FaceTime video. Because that's how Ann calls me before the show.
You don't answer the spam?
No.
I'm joking. I don't either.
But D. Will hits me and he goes, I want to read this verbatim. Craig, that was me. I was wondering why you kept sending me to voicemail. I had an amazing offer for you.
That's Bravo. Funny.
It's a funny Instagram message. I hope he's listening to the show so he gets to gets his moment to shine, but I will respond in the next break.
It would be insane if the spam numbers were all the same, though.
They're all, well, I know they're spam. I know it ain't a real thing because they're all 864 numbers, which is the upstate South Carolina area code that I have because I got my cell phone number when I was still in high school and lived there because that's where I grew up, and ain't nobody calling me from that area code. Not a soul is calling me. That's not saved as a contact in my phone. So, good times. I did get spam. I got a spam voicemail the other day from someone claiming to be in the Department of Revenue in South Carolina. It was a Columbia area code, which is the state capital down there. And I was like, homie, I don't got no revenue in South Carolina. I don't know. It's getting scary out there, man. These AI stuff and
AI's
chatbots and, you know, they can imitate people. Like, it's really, really scary. Be careful on your phones, people, in all seriousness. D. Will? Not very serious, very hilarious. Okay, NFL rule changes. That's what we're talking about right now. There has been multiple rule changes proposed for the NFL. Of course, they discussed these throughout the course of their league meetings. Some of those are coming up. And so there are three big ones. We're going to talk about at least the first two. The first one is NFL owners are going to consider a proposal that was put forth by the Lions to modify the league's playoff seeding system to allow a wild card team with a better record to be seeded ahead of a division winner. This was proposed by the Detroit Lions, if you'll remember last year, were the number one overall seed in the NFC. Remember, who do they wind up playing coming out of their bye, Anthony? I can't remember.
They played the Commanders.
They sure did. And refresh my memory on what happened in that game.
Oh, the Commanders put belt to butt.
They sure did. As as Jared Goff put football to Quan Martin's hands, and a whole bunch of stuff happened. You know, reverse pass, whoopsie daisies. Mike Sanders still with the pick. Good times. So the thing is about the Commanders is they were a 12-win team. Had the seedings last year gone in record order, the Lions would have been the one seed. The Eagles would have been the two, as they were. The Commanders, based off the fact that they finished 12-5, would have been the four seed. The Vikings, who wound up as the fifth seed, would have been the three seed. And thus, after wild card weekend, the thing is, the Lions would have still gotten... Well, I guess no, because the Rams were the four seed, right? They were sitting there at 10-7. They won the 4-5 game, so they beat Minnesota. So the Rams would have wound up playing the Lions as the lowest remaining seed, as opposed to the Commanders, who won as a six seed over Tampa, being the team that played Detroit. So that's how that would have affected them last year. And frankly, I'm fine with this. Like, I understand why divisions exist, both for just ease of scheduling, and then I understand why the division winner should make the playoffs, right? The simple argument would be that you would take a group of teams that play basically identical schedules, right? Because we know that the NFC East will play another division, and all the teams, the Commanders, the Cowboys, the Giants, the Eagles, they're going to play all the teams in that other division of an NFC division and an AFC division, and then there's a couple of wild card games within their schedule based off of where they finished the previous season. But generally speaking, you've played a similar schedule, unlike the chaos of ranking college teams, which is subjective because everyone's playing a totally different schedule. But if you come out of that mostly sameness with the best record, I think you should deserve a playoff spot. I think that's perfectly fine. I don't think you need to say, like, oh, let's just do the best teams by record, period. I'm fine with keeping a division winner gets a playoff spot. But if you win a crap division, Houston Texans last year, winning the AFC South with not even getting to double-digit wins, like the Commanders did under Rivera the year they won the NFC East, why are they hosting a playoff game at 7-9? Like, that's ridiculous. The Commanders won 12 games last year, and they were on the road at 10-win Tampa. I'm fine with switching that. That's perfectly fine with me.
Yeah, I'm okay with it as well. And the fact that you just brought up, you know, the Commanders were 12-5, we would have been four in the division. I mean, in the conference, we would have had a home playoff game. And
yeah,
you know that what that would have did for, you know, the city as a whole, because of like where we've come from and, you know, what we had to pull ourselves out of, you know, to turn around the franchise. I think that would have been huge for the city. But yeah, in terms of like just records, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. It would have changed the AFC as well. The Chargers were the fifth seed as a wild card at 11-6. Then they lost at Houston, who was 10-7, winning the South last year. So yeah, I'm good with that one. The other big one, there's two other ones. The Eagles made a proposal to align the postseason and regular season overtime rules. I'm fine with it the way they are. Like, I get each game is really super duper important, but you just don't need longer games in the regular season. Yes, in the playoffs, I want each team to have a possession no matter what. If you can't get a stop defensively in a regular season game and you can't separate yourselves after 60 minutes of football, I'm fine with, yes, I don't want the field goal and the coin flip. Honestly, I'd be fine with college overtime rules. I actually don't think that's like the silliest idea, even though it does feel silly at times. But if you're going to play more football, defense is a part of football. You got to get a stop of at least holding a team to a field goal in the regular season. Do you disagree, or are you team touchdown?
No, I'm more for player safety. I agree with you. I don't think games need to be longer in the regular season, because who's to say a team doesn't go to 3-4 straight overtime games? Like, that's a lot on the body.
Yeah.
Playing five additional quarters, and then sometimes you end up getting down to like 2-3 minutes left in the fifth quarter. So like, essentially, it's just too much football.
I've always thought the other way to do it is just like play a half a quarter. If you want to play full time, 7.5, because that's the other thing, is it takes the timing element out. Let's play a 7.5 minute overtime no matter what. Yeah. It's a half a quarter. And if whoever has more points at the end wins, and if the team that gets the ball first goes on a 7.5 minute drive and kicks a game-winning field goal, that's on you as a defense. You can't get driven on like that. You can't let them milk that clock against you like that. That's just is what it is. But then you time cap it, you know, and, you know, 2 minute drive at the end of the game, you could still have that, right? Because you never get that sense of urgency rarely at the end of an overtime because you're really fighting score, not clock. So that would be my alternate rule in Craig's goofy overtime fantasy land. But that's one of them. Then the other one, which we'll talk about a little bit more later, because Eric Edholm is actually going to join us next talking NFL draft from NFL.com. But it's about, you know, the Packers are making the player safety and pace of play article or argument on the tush push. Those are the wrong arguments to make. JP actually was talking about this a little bit earlier today on social media. Just ban pushing players from behind like it used to be. This play used to be illegal because you used to not be able to push people. And now you can. So that would be the way to change it. Make a football argument. But also then, like, when you get these big giant scrums, I don't know. I got to think more about the tush push thing. All right, when we get back, though, Eric Edholm is going to join us. And we're going to talk NFL draft now that free agency has more or less come to a close.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections. But you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We are live on the Team 980. We are always live as well on the free Odyssey app, and we're streaming on YouTube at the Team 980. I don't know how many shows will ever give you the NFL draft, the NBA draft, and the WNBA draft all in one day, but we are doing that. It's draft day here on the show. It just kind of that's what the news is. And to get us started talking NFL draft, it's our pleasure to welcome back to the show our guy, Eric Edholm, lead draft writer for NFL.com. Double E, how we doing, man?
Yeah, just don't ask me about any hoops prospects. I'll be all right, man.
No, I know that I'm good. I know you're a Mizzou guy. Your team's in the tournament. I'm a Syracuse guy. Mine's not. So we're just going to avoid the hoops. We're just going to stick with football. Because suddenly, that's the sport my school's better at. But I don't want to really talk about that either. We could do it's Kyle McCord bit, but we won't.
Sure.
I actually do want to ask you about a quarterback real quick, though, that I just thought this is interesting, and it's kind of the news of or one of the news items of the day in draft land. Jalen Milroe just ran a 4.37 I saw at his pro day.
Yeah.
Why in the world did he not do that at the combine and become the talk of Indy for a week?
Yeah. Apparently, he was on the fence up until the final kind of, you know, decision day, if you will. I mean, it was when he met with a lot of teams at the combine. He was one of the more popular quarterback interviews for that combine setting, and I'm sure he'll have, you know, team visits because he's a big question mark, right? There's a lot to like about his physical tools. There's a lot to question about his game. I saw him down at the Senior Bowl. I don't think he separated himself. So yeah, I was thinking going into the combine. In fact, I even included him in my 17 candidates for the fastest 40-yard dash. And, of course, I always pick extra because guys bow out and stuff. But I think he's my first quarterback in the last 3 years of doing it. So, you know, you saw it today. He's fast. Not just fast, but fast. And I was a little surprised he didn't run an Indy. You know, maybe he didn't feel like he had enough kind of training for it or, you know, just sort of general healing from the season or whatever. But he opted out, and maybe we'll see. I'm sure there's still going to be buzz from this, though.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll keep an eye on that. But luckily, Eric, this year, that's the last quarterback question on a DC radio show. We got that all straightened out last year. You've only done one mock draft so far that's up on NFL.com. I'm sure you got your 2.0 coming around the corner. You had James Pierce going to Washington. Generally speaking, when you look at this edge rusher class, because now, like, looking what Washington did in free agency, that seems like their number one need if it wasn't already going in. But with Tunsil, you know, showing up, like, tackle is now down the list a little bit. How confident are you that this edge class will fall in a way that there is a player worthy of them taking at that position at 29?
Yeah, I think it's the one position where you feel like, you know, if you'd asked me what some of the stronger positions in this draft class were, I'd mention tight end, I'd mention running back for sure, and I definitely mention, you know, the defensive line class as a whole, but specifically edge. And I think, you know, given the value of those two other positions, running back and tight end, where, yeah, we'll see some first-rounders here and there, but people are generally a little bit more suspicious about using higher picks of those positions. You're left with edge, which is the premium position, right? It's probably quarterback, receiver, edge, offensive tackle. Those are sort of the, you know, the money positions that more often than not go first round, even in down years for the position. So there is a high value there, obviously. But I think there's a little bit of volatility with some guys, and Pierce is one of them. You know, he has some character questions, some sort of football character stuff that, you know, we haven't always seen him play with a hot motor. And so there's, you know, you don't exactly know who's got him on their board and who doesn't and who's worried about that and who isn't. You know, same with Mike Green, who spent some time at Virginia and left there in maybe a little bit of controversial fashion. And even though he's sort of vehemently denied the allegations against him, I think teams have done work on him. And so, and then like Shamar Stewart, even the workout warrior from A&M. I mean, you know, these are all three players that have great alluring traits, but also some big question marks. So I think that kind of keeps alive the possibility of a real legitimate first round talent being there when the Commanders pick or, you know, within close range of it.
So that becomes really interesting to me, listening to how Adam Peters talks about things, how Dan Quinn talks about things, because they talk about that Commander's tag. And if I hear something like, he doesn't play hard every snap, or there's a little bit of a question about the motor,
right,
that feels like that guy's off their board. That's just not how they roll, how they operate. So if we were to just, for the sake of argument, for the sake of discussion, take anybody off the board who there is a motor, like football character question. Who are the edge guys that are then left in that reign? I know a guy like Landon Jackson probably comes up, who was just an absolute freak show at the combine, plays really hard. Who else could possibly be available in that range? Or maybe if they trade back somewhere into the 30s, low 40s could be available.
Yeah, I mean, Jackson's sort of that borderline first, second-round guy and, you know, certainly looks the part. I mean, I think he would be a, you know, almost like a Greg Rousseau-ish kind of build, you know, that sort of long, leggy, strong guy. Had a scary neck injury at the last regular season game of the year and got carted off. He's fine. It was just one of those things that you worried about at the time because there was some first-round buzz at the end of the season. It was interesting with him, too, because he didn't really show out day one of the Senior Bowl to me. I thought he actually had a rough practice, but it said something to me that he really bounced back the next 2 days. And I know there's a lot of weight put on that first practice sometimes, and you know, not everybody stays for the entire week and all that, but you know, that to me is the guy who said, okay, I got to raise my game here and did so. And the testing in Indy was the sort of the icing on the cake, if you will. So, yeah, I mean, he's just one of a number of guys. I mean, you know, the Ohio State edges are definitely going to play full tilt. You know, Tua Maloa and Jack Sawyer are both kind of high energy guys, both NFL physiques, well built for the trench duty, if, you know, in battling in the muck up front. But also, I think, have enough juice. They're not really true edge benders, but, you know, guys who can hold up outside. So if you're looking for more of the zippy, bendy pass rusher, I think he's probably gone by the time they pick. But Donovan Ezeraku from Boston College is the one who is probably, you know, along with Mike Green, I would say, made the most of their draft stock in the last 6 months just in terms of the edge rush class. He's more of your smaller, longer, leggier pass rusher, kind of that Will McDonald mold a little bit.
Yeah, Ezeraku's a guy that was being mocked to Washington basically until like the end of January. And then everyone's like, never mind. Eric Edholm with us, lead NFL draft writer for NFL.com. The other position that I think is really interesting for Washington at 29 is corner. It seems like every mock draft simulation that I do, every actual mock draft that I look at, like there's a lot of corners that are going to go kind of right after that. And if they decide, no, these guys are all tiered for us the same, that's certainly a position they could attack based off of their current roster. Is there a guy in that range that you particularly like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm maybe a little higher on Maxwell Hairston from Kentucky than some other people are. I don't know. It's hard. I haven't really sort of caught up on everybody's list. But, you know, he missed some time this season with injury. It didn't really have an opportunity at the Senior Bowl to show out. And so, you know, obviously running a 4.28 will get attention. And that was kind of the time I think he was hoping for and needed to run, just because you're not talking about a super thickly built corner. I mean, he's on the lighter side, 180 pounds and just below 6 foot. So that said, I think he can play on the outside. I think he can be very good. He's in that range, I think, you know, somewhere in that 25 to 35 range, if I had to guess, maybe a little longer, but corners go fast, you know. I would say the kid from FSU, Thomas, is a different type of build, longer, stronger. Certainly would make a lot of sense if he was there. For a bad football team, I saw some pretty good tape on this guy, and he was a day one show out in Mobile too. So those are a couple that I like, different styles. Jahdae Barron, you know, there's been more buzz on him. I would say he might be off the board at that point. And then in round two, you start getting in a little bit of murky area. Some of the injured guys like Siobhan Revelle from ECU and, you know, Benjamin Morrison. And, you know, I mean, there's a potential first-round talents that you could get later on. But, you know, obviously it comes with a little bit of a buyer beware tag, I would say.
I got a couple more questions real quick for Eric Edholm here on the NFL Draft with us here on the Hoffman Show. The first one, Eric, is when you've watched – free agency happen and some teams fill some needs, and you're obviously in the background working on your mock draft 2.0, presumably. What's kind of the biggest contour change of this draft, whether it's a team that filled a quarterback need or a big tackle need or whatever. Like, what is some of the changes that you've seen from mock draft 1.0 pre-free agency to kind of what you're working on now with 2.0 presumably coming out soon with team needs evolving?
Yeah, next week we'll have the. I think I've gotten through about three picks so far because I keep kind of wavering on the top. I think we have learned a few things, but we're, you know, Aaron Rodgers kind of making us wait a little bit. Obviously, that affects some of the teams picking near the top. And, you know, where's Russell Wilson going to land? Does that affect a team's draft plans if they're just totally not enamored with the quarterback? So, but, you know, you just sort of look at the Titans at one and just figure, you know, they haven't been real aggressive at quarterback. It just sort of feels like they can sit there at one, take Cam Ward, you know, wipe their hands and say, all right, we got our guy. You know, is he as good as Callahan had with Burrow at number one a few years back? No, I don't think so. I think he's a good football player. I really do. And I think he could end up being approaching a top 10 quarterback. I just don't know if he's ever going to be special. So, yeah, I think that's becoming a little more crystallized, but that also could be a way to lure the Giants up. But I think Ward going one feels more likely now than it ever has. And then you have to ask yourself, you know, how to 2-3-4 line up. And, you know, the draft is still really murky. We have kind of a couple of really unusual guys like Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter, true blue chip guys. You have Austin Jenny, one of the better backs we've seen in recent years. But we don't have that one true alpha receiver. We don't have the clear number one at left tackle. It's kind of defense heavy. There's just a lot of, you know, two tight ends who could go in the top 15. It's a very unusual year in a lot of ways, so, which I like, and it makes it harder to predict and harder to kind of feel out. So, yeah, I'm going to be slogging along these next 3 days on the mock trying to, you know, make it all make sense, or at least something close to it.
And then on day four, Russell Wilson will sign and throw your whole thing in the garbage can again.
That happens every year, man. There was a trade a couple years ago. Like, I was 10 minutes away from filing, and it was like, oh, first-round pick traded.
Yeah, by the way, also,
it was the end of my laptop at that point, yeah.
This is the first year in, I'm trying, you might know the stats, so I'll just start saying it and you can finish my sentence.
It's been a while.
I said that every single team has their own first round pick. It's like over a decade at least, if not longer.
Yeah, no, it's been a long time. I forget the year, but yeah, it's been a long time since we've had that. So yeah, I mean, just a very unusual thing, and we don't have any first rounders traded next year yet. You know, no big quarterback moves or anything, or, you know, Myles Garrett didn't switch teams, so. You know, I don't know. Does that mean there's a calm before the storm? We're going to get a lot of activity? Maybe. You know, teams like Washington and Minnesota don't have a lot of draft capital, especially Washington, five this year, five next. So, you know, that trade down scenario you were floating, I could see that too.
All right, for sure. All right, last thing for you real quick. Speaking of Washington, obviously much of local interest here being a local radio show. The Commanders were so unexpectedly good last year. I basically asked everyone who came through at the combine this question, so I'm going to wrap up with you on this thought.
Yeah.
The Commanders were so unexpectedly good, and they were a very interesting exercise in team building that I think it made a lot of people, certainly me, but I'm local. I did this. I talked about them every day, nonstop, for, you know, since the day that Adam Peters was hired. So I thought about team building very differently after covering last year's team. You have a much wider scope of the league. You've been doing this a long time. Was there something, though, that you took out of what Washington did, the way they built it, that informs the way you're thinking about the offseason and team building this year and more or less going forward?
Yeah, obviously, you know, you kind of start with the quarterback position with any time a GM takes over a job and, you know, where are they at? What's the level of urgency for that? It was high, obviously, but they were in position to get one. They knew it. They went through the process. That was like one channel. The other channel was, I think, just filling out the roster with as many competitive, roster situations as you could. Filling out talent. Like, we don't need everybody to be a hero this year, right? You know, that. Like, I was a big fan of Ben Sinnott. You know, I thought he was a really good college tight end, is going to make a good NFL player. We didn't see a lot from him, right? And that was a good, like, and nice to have that kind of luxury. But just going through and finding some of those second contract guys to, you know, like Jeremy Chinn and Frankie Louvu and stuff, who were, you know, a little bit slipped through the cracks, talented players you can kind of get in there and make work. And obviously it was kind of a, you know, the Wagner move was obviously a sort of a crystallizing move up front, and just throw as many one-year veterans into competitive situations with rookies. And it was a smart team-building exercise. And, you know, Adam had such a good reputation for years. You know, we kind of heard about him and a few others the last few years. And, you know, he got his opportunity, and I think he made the most of it year one. This year's been different, right? Obviously, the aggressive moves on offense. And it just shows that, you know, you don't have to necessarily have the same philosophy every single year. Situations change. They win. Now you're in a different mode. You're gearing up to make a big run, and that's why you saw Tunsil and Debo.
I think that's a great point you just made at the end, too. Like, things change. Your cap situation changes. The league market changes. Your urgency to win. Your quarterback situation. So, I think a lot of people are always looking for the perfect process every single time, and that doesn't really exist. Eric Edholm, lead writer for NFL.com when it comes to the NFL draft. Again, it's new mock draft 2.0 coming next week. Eric, always a pleasure, sir. Really appreciate the time. I know you're busy this time of year and slammed always with the kiddos and everything else you got going on. So, hope everyone's feeling better in the Edholm household, and we'll talk to you again before the draft for sure.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Eric Edholm with us here on the Hoffman Show. Coming up at 5 p.m., NBA draft. Jeremy Wu, ESPN.com. The Jazz and Wizards are playing tonight. They're both not very good in 2025, but that's because they want to be really good in the 2025 NBA draft. We'll talk about the non-Cooper Flag prospects that we should be watching and the two Rutgers kids that aren't in the NCAA tournament with Wu coming up at 5 here on the Hoffman Show. Anthony, I just found something that we're going to have to revisit later in the show. Also, I feel like you and your camera have moved 78 times. You went from, like, you were shrunk down in the corner on the left of the screen to now you look like a giant.
Really?
Yeah. And now I look like a small person.
I did move my camera. So all my cameras are now on this monitor as opposed to this one, because when you're in StreamYard, I usually look at this one. And now so it looks like I'm not looking at you.
No, I like this placement, but now I just refocused it on the screen. So now you're where you're supposed to be.
Am I still on the left?
You're still on the left.
Okay.
Yeah. No. It looks much better now. But apparently, remember the segment we did with Linnell last week about Connor Orr's ridiculous thoughts on the Commanders?
Yep.
In his column from, when is this from? I don't use Twitter very much anymore. And every once in a while I pop back on, just to like check news or try to find a link to a story. And I'll like click over to my mentions real quick just to see who's still talking to me. Someone, I guess our little segment made it back to Connor Orr.
Ooh.
And he wrote about it in his column 5 days ago. He goes, let's talk about the Commanders in a little more detail. Shockingly, a truncated clip of something I said generated some frustration in a local market that assumes I either hate the franchise, haven't examined it thoroughly enough, or that I'm baiting people into getting upset. I can assure you that all three of these assertions are 100% true. Kidding. Which is a funny bit. I need to read his response, but we'll get back into this in the next hour.
Okay.
Connor Orr! It's war. It just works out that rhymed. I would have said that if his name was Jack Smith. Or I shouldn't use Jack Smith. He's one of the... That's a political... I was thinking of a generic name, but he's someone who's a person in politics. Give me a random name, Anthony. I'm my brain's...
Jeremy Wu.
He's an ESPN NBA draft analyst, and Jeremy Wu is going to join us next.